The Jen, Gabe, and Chewy podcast is sponsored by Celsius Energy Drink, and I am here to tell you it makes a huge difference in my mornings. With a unique blend of essential energy and key vitamins, Celsius is your partner to an active lifestyle. My favorite, the peach vibe. Learn more at Celsius.com and pick up Celsius Energy Drinks today.
Showtime. The right way to start your day. This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
At one point, I finally said, Free, can you finish this after you put on some shorts?
She ate breakfast naked?
She didn't even want a nap.
I've had bedroom naked. I've had walk to the bathroom naked. I have never had living room naked.
Oh, it's a scene.
It's like you're living in the Playboy Mansion.
So, nakedivity, or whatever the word is different to us.
So she coughed.
Coughing? Naked? It's a turnoff, man.
Everything goes with naked.
When you cough, there are thousands of unseen muscles that suddenly spring into action. It's like watching that fat guy catch a cannonball in his stomach in slow motion.
Nakedness? Jason, are you looking for nakedness?
I guess.
I kind of like nakedivity better.
This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All Studios at The Avenue with Gabe Neitzel and Mark Chamora. Here's Jen Lattis.
She wants to ride it, she's trying to hide it. I'm cool as ever, she's too excited. Her man look like he wanna fight. He ain't doing nothing but running his mouth. Talk about it, we all about it. They make the plans, we sit and count. Our chairs stack it just like a mountain. You heard about it, she running her mouth.
We were pretty skeleton crew yesterday, Gabe.
I'm cool as ever, she's too
just
excited.
You
yep.
And me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we had Max.
And we are getting closer to full strength. Full strength being the original members, which, of course, Ashton is an original member, but Joshy is now the producer of. So the four of us, we're getting closer because Joshy is back. Hi, Joshy.
Hey, Jen, sup?
How are you doing today?
I'm exhausted.
You had a day off. How could you be exhausted after a day off?
Well, the person we refer to as Mussolini on this show, my girlfriend.
I mean, I feel like we're using the term we pretty...
Yeah, you're really...
We. This is a collective us.
Yeah, exactly. Strength in numbers and whatnot.
I took the day off because we moved. We recently moved from Bayview over to Washington Heights. New place, bigger spot. Lot more things for us there. Cheaper rent as well. All things we are looking for. I took yesterday off because we have the new puppy. So an adjustment for a puppy moving to a new house is a big deal. And I am glad I was there for that. I also realized I think I was just free labor for not only yesterday, but the past 4 days. We moved. We did all the move ourselves. Gabe Hale helped us on Friday. We moved all the furniture and stuff again on Saturday. Sunday, we unpacked. And then yesterday I was building bookcases, carrying stuff to the basement, putting things where they need to go. So I have not been at work in 4 days, and I've been doing really nothing but working physically, labor.
Manual labor.
Yeah.
As part of the move.
Yes.
You did not take yesterday off to move, but consequently you did end up finishing the move, or at least getting closer to the finish line of the move yesterday.
Correct. We are one step closer to, I almost have everything in its final resting spot, at least for now.
I hear people say all the time.
For the next 12 months for you. Let's be honest.
Wait, what do you mean in the next 12 months?
Oh, I'm pretty sure Josh has moved more than anyone probably I've ever known. Like, in the time I've known Josh, which is a little over a decade at this point, I don't know if Josh has ever been in the same place for a year.
What?
For
Why?
More than a year. I don't know if he's ever renewed a lease.
Are you nomadic? Are you one of those people who, like, you get, like, itchy, you get hives if you stay in one place too long?
No. None of these things are really that much my choice for moving, except for a couple times. And I do want to correct the record. I did stay one place for 2 years.
Oh, okay. So one lease was renewed.
Yes, I
in
did.
The last decade. One. In the last decade.
Wait, this one is like the conversation we have had about NFL players getting their second contract. Right? Like,
yeah, I'm a one contract guy. I don't know what that says about me and my housing situation.
How is it possible that in the last decade you have moved that many times?
I've lived in three different cities, some of them farther away from the others. A lot of the situations are just changing. I had somebody buy a house while they were living with me as a roommate at one situation. I can give you a full rundown here.
I would love a full rundown. Full rundown of where Joshy has lived in the last, what, 12 years?
Or so.
12 or so.
I'm going to do just as best as my memory can serve it here. I moved from my parents' house to Soho, corporate housing in New York City, when I moved with the company here. Then we moved from Bushwick, Brooklyn, from there to Bushwick, Brooklyn. Now, mind you, I moved back for 3 months here to help out locally here. So I did live back at home while still living in Bushwick, but also being back here as well. I moved back to my parents. Then I moved to North Avenue on the east side. From there, I moved
now
to...
Now we're in Wisconsin, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
right.
Back in Wisconsin.
He's back in Milwaukee. Okay.
Then to Warren Avenue, right off of Brady Street. That's where I stayed 2 years.
Great spot.
From Brady Street, I went to my parents in a short term because I was moving to Madison. Then I moved into Madison, and from Madison, I went to what we'll call couch surfing. I lived at Pratik's. People know him around here. I lived at other friends' houses. From there to Brewers Hill. From Brewers Hill to Walker's Point. From Walker's Point to Bayview. And now from Bayview to Washington Heights.
And that's all in the last 12 years?
I think 12 is aggressive. I think it's less than 12, if I were...
Yeah. It's, I mean, I haven't been married for 2 years. So it's coming up here in, you know, a month or so. And you are now... You've lived in more places than years I've been married in the last 2 years.
Yeah. Well, I've worked...
Because the Walker's Point spot was sweet.
That was all just since I've been employed by Good Karma Brands. And I believe my 8 or 9 year is coming up here.
Oh,
soon.
My gosh.
Yeah.
So you're the expert on moving then?
Yes. I, you know, see, what do they say?
Begrudgingly? Really,
yes. It's not by choice. Some of the moves have been like, well, this place wasn't what we thought it was. We got to get out of here. We can do something better. Some of it was, hey, the circumstances are changing. I'm changing cities. Some of it are roommates moving out, things along those.
I will say this. Josh is, when I showed up on Friday to help him move some stuff, he was the most prepared. A lot of times I feel like when you help friends move, sometimes they're not packed at all. That has happened to me before. We're like, oh yeah, just got to help move a couple of boxes. And then the entire Saturday's gone because there's like still, you know, still dishes in the cupboard, still like nothing's been packed. So now I'm helping you pack and move. So that's happened. But I just showed up at Josh's house. Everything was in a box. They had, like, he had a system of his girlfriend and her friend would bring it out to the front porch. We would grab it off the front porch, get it in the truck. We had a nice little assembly line going. Like, it was a very efficient process from what we did, just kind of moving all the boxes that they had this past Friday.
Yeah.
Across the board, though, people think moving is the worst, right?
Because it is.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. Why is it the worst? What is it about moving that makes it the worst?
Well, because I think there's a number of things. First, I mean, at this point in your life, you just want to go home and relax at the end of the day, right?
Big time.
And you don't have a home while you're moving, like, because you've got to pack everything up. So now your house isn't really your home. You're moving to a different place.
It's more of a storage unit.
Yeah, it's more of a... Exactly. And then it's going to be... Your new place is going to be more of a storage unit for the first... I mean, it seems like Josh has gotten a little bit ahead of it, but it's about a month, right? Before you kind of... finally get everything unpacked, everything's out of its boxes, everything is where it needs to be. But also, like, when you pack, you're kind of going through an evaluation of your life.
Mm.
When you're putting things, do I need this? Do I want to keep this? And then it ends up being, you know, a trip down memory. Okay, do I actually want to have this? Is this sentimental enough? Am I going to hold on to it? Do I need to put it in a box? Well, now where am I going to get boxes? It seems like it's constant chaos after you leave your job.
Maybe the silver lining to you moving as frequently as you have, and if you're just tuning in, Josh, he just revealed to us he has moved, I don't know what the numbers are, but it sounds like 10 times.
10 moves? 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. But this is the 12th.
12 moves? And
that's
you've
not
been at Good Karma Brands for 8 years or 9 years?
I think it's 9 years is like
12
right here.
Moves in 9 years?
Yeah.
And that does not include, I only said the parents once.
Yeah.
Oh, and you were back and forth with
yes, because
several times in that story.
Some of those times, like, stuff just stayed packed, and then it got moved into the new spot, so not fully.
But it still counts as moving. You moved it from one location to another. So what I was going to say is, I assume that you have pretty well sifted through your life.
Oh, I have. The move of my stuff only into this new place was, I think I got it down to a couch and around 9 to 10 boxes of stuff total. And that's all my worldly belongings.
But you
other
have joint
than...
stuff. You guys have joint stuff, right?
Yes.
Like the kitchen stuff is joint stuff.
Correct. But mostly her stuff, if we're being honest.
Wait, at some point you're going to have to stop doing the his and hers for stuff, right? I mean, even if she brought it into the relationship, now it's both of yours.
Yeah, but like some of it literally she just bought before I existed. So like...
existed in her life.
Yes.
I feel like... is an important distinction here.
I don't know. Maybe there's a May-December thing happening here that we're not aware of. I don't know. She's aging beautifully, by the way. So, because to me, that's the worst part of moving. The worst part of moving is assessing your life and being like, how the bleep did I get all this stuff?
Yeah.
And why am I holding on to this? Right? And then, like you said, you're doing the inventory in your brain. Well, like, maybe I should hang on. Maybe my kids would want it someday. The answer to that is no.
Mm-hmm. They never
do. They do not want your stuff. And so to me, that would feel like, other than, and here's where I'm kind of like debating myself, the manual labor part, which you experienced yesterday and the previous 3 days. Like the manual labor part is probably the other worst part of moving because, well, we're just not built for that anymore.
I'll tell you again, I feel like I got the easy part on Friday helping Josh because, again, it was just all the boxes and the things that they had packed up. So it wasn't any like... The worst part is when you have the awkward couch or the awkward bed, and now you're trying to figure out the right angles when you're doing it by yourself to get in through the doors. And I can't imagine what that was like because there are some skinny hallways and some skinny door frames in Josh's new place. Like, it's not great.
Off, said, screw it. Said, screw it. Yeah. Take the doors off. Let's not deal with them. Yeah, I mean, I've gotten it down to a very efficient process. And now, had this move not happened, the timing it is where we've got an expensive trip to Mexico coming. We're paying double rent because this place was not worth a place letting go. Like, it's that nice to us. It brought that much value. So I'm paying double rent and paying for a trip to Mexico. Otherwise, I just pay people to do it. I'm out of the business of moving myself. Some of the other times have been like, well, I don't have enough to pay movers. Like, I'm not going to pay $700 for a couch and 12 boxes. It's just simply not worth all that money. So at this point, it's just, we had to do it this time, and I'm done doing it, moving, asking people to move. I'm never doing it again.
It does feel like the best money spent hiring movers.
Because I've hired them before.
Pound for pound, dollar for dollar. Oh, it feels like hiring movers is the best money spent. So if you can afford it, obviously, and Josh, you just mentioned the financial situation that you guys are currently in. We're advocating for that. We don't even have a partnership with a moving company, and we are telling you, go out and get yourself someone to move. What is the worst thing about moving? Because everybody says that moving is the worst, but we're trying to figure out why it's the worst. Some of it is packing. The packing process sucks, you know, especially your breakables. You know, putting those glasses in the bubble wrap and then putting it in those specialized boxes that have the dividers and the separators so the glasses aren't clanging together. That's annoying. Are we all in agreement that packing is worse than unpacking? Unpacking, you can go quickly, right? No?
I don't know if unpacking, I mean, some things unpacking goes quickly, like clothes. Like that's, but kitchen stuff, like brand new kitchen. You got to figure out, I mean, you could put something here today, but then realize that doesn't make sense later in the week and then have to kind of reorganize the kitchen.
From a workflow efficiency standpoint, sure, that is tricky. Do you have a specific spot? Like utensils go here and glasses go here and plates go here in proximity to like the appliances? Isn't that pretty standard? Like,
yes, but some stuff like just doesn't, you think it makes sense and then it ends up not making sense or... oh, I forgot I have this, which should go here versus this going here. The unpacking is brutal because it usually happens immediately after you move. So you're already exhausted from, I mean, we had 5 people helping us move the couches, the all the heavy stuff. And then it's like, well, thanks everyone. Now here I go with, and there's also the reorganizing because you bring all your stuff into one room or multiple rooms. And then have to figure out where it goes. You're lifting boxes, putting it away. Oh, that doesn't make sense. Where's this, though? Because this needs to go with it. It's the worst.
All right, so let's put it on the poll. What is the worst part of moving? I think we've nailed down at least a few of them. Maybe packing is one. Unpacking could be the other one. Let's not overthink this. the heavy lifting part, I think a lot of people would say is the worst part, because you do have tables and couches and chairs. And if you like, for me, I have a sauna. You know, like when we move, that's going to be a real pain in the neck to move.
Best
right?
of luck to you.
Thank you very much. Gabe's like, don't call me.
Change your number.
I dislike moving so much that I think if someone gave me a house right now, I would say no thank you. No thank you. We're good. We're just going to stay right here.
Free house.
But you don't have to pay the mortgage anymore. Yeah, totally worth it. I will pay my mortgage if it means I don't have to move. Or how did I get all this stuff? Right? Because I think that that mental part of it is part of why moving is tough. In your house currently, things are in closets, things are in bins, things are in the attic, things are in the garage. But when you move, there is a very visual representation, be it the truck or the car loads or the people who are there moving your things, of all the things that you have accumulated in your life. And I think that's scary for some people.
I don't know how we've already filled up our house. Like, we went from a 2-bedroom apartment to a whole ass house. Like, how did I get all this stuff? Where did I keep it? Where did I keep it in the old? Yeah, like where did I keep it in the old place that I've somehow already filled up our house, and then we just got stuff in the basement. Like, I have no idea how we did this previously.
Reaction rolling in on our ESPN Milwaukee talk and text line. Remember, that's how you can get in with the show every single day. AC weighing in saying, moving stinks because packing stinks. I love to unpack and figure out where I'm going to put all the stuff, but I hate packing up everything before the packing part. That is definitely the part that stinks. Putting everything in boxes, et cetera, et cetera. Peter weighing in saying, Joshy is the Ryan Fitzpatrick of moving. Ryan
Journeyman.
Or Josh McCown. I can see you as a Josh McCown as well. What is the worst part of moving, says Clint? All of it.
Yeah.
Every single part.
You know
part.
What I decided, and this is probably, I'm a little jaded from moving so often. The best part is throwing stuff away. When I got stuff that I can take to Goodwill, stuff I can part with, stuff that's like kind of just hung around and you never made decisions on, and then you finally go, I ain't packing this. I ain't moving this. Throwing it away. I'm done with it forever. It's like a relief. You got less things. I hate having too many things. Stuff stacked on counters everywhere. Getting rid of stuff is the best.
The best thing that happened when we were redoing our basement was we got a dumpster.
Uh-huh.
Right? And it just sat on the driveway for 6 months. So that was a really good opportunity to purge. Right? You got the big old dumpster there. You can just take things and like, whoop, whoop, couple bunch of kids' toys. Let me tell you. I don't know what happened to them. Where did they go?
Idea.
What do you mean you can't find Miss Molly's kitchen set? That's so strange. It was here yesterday. Good thing that dumpster's 7 feet tall. You can't see into it. We got Jason Wilde coming up next. Want to talk to him about the Green Bay Packers. A lot of the coaches spoke yesterday. We listened to it all. We'll talk to Jason about the best moments right after this.
Is your business looking for a localized banking solution and a strategic partner? Fifth Third Bank has been looking forward to the future and helping businesses shape what's next for 165 years. And for the last 15 right here in Milwaukee. They offer industry-specific expertise, local decision-making capabilities, and extensive experience to help navigate complexities of a constantly changing business market environment with your business in mind. So what does that mean? That means that Fifth Third is big enough to provide sophisticated solutions and expert guidance, but also empowered to make local decisions and work from a foundation of strong community connections. Commercial banking value only Fifth Third can deliver. Fifth Third Bank, National Association, custom solutions built around your goals. Member FDIC.
Ready, down, put.
All Packers, all the time.
He has come light years in the last 2 months, and people should be over the moon excited about that.
Okay, most of the time.
Almonds specifically or all nuts?
Well, these nuts, those nuts, whatever nuts work.
It's Jason Wilde on Jen, Gabe, and Chew. Brought to you by Boucher Automotive. With 16 different new car brands and over 35 pre-owned brands to choose from. Boucher Automotive. We are driven by you.
Big day at 1265 yesterday, as we got to hear from a lot of the coaches, and our guy Jason Wilde was there. Good morning, Jason. How are you today?
Wasn't that big.
What wasn't that big?
You said it was a big day yesterday at 1265. Wasn't that big.
Really?
Only two coaches. Yeah, Bisaccia rescheduled to Thursday.
we got coaches tomorrow. We got coaches Thursday. We're spreading out like the draft. But that was fine because Jeff Hafley, I got to tell you, I can't wait to play nickel corner for him. I'm really excited about the system. He's got me pumped, man. I don't know if he can coach worth a damn, but the way he describes what he wants to do and the enthusiasm with which he does it, Joe Barry, very nice man, very nice. Not sure that he inspired a lot of enthusiasm and excitement in his troops with his scheme or with his persona. Like, again, there were, you know, apparently one of the first meetings he had with the defense back in 21, he tackled air. So he like did a flying tackle onto the ground. But judging from the way his guys kind of responded to him, they were not all that enthusiastic about him. And I think if Jeff Hafley is with his guys the way he is with us now after his second press Q&A, I can see why guys are excited, and I can really see why they're excited about the scheme and about how the defensive linemen are going to be one gapping, so they're going to get up the field and attack, and they're going to have in the back end, they're going to have to tackle and come up with speed, but at the same time, they're going to have vision to the football because they're going to play a lot of zone where they can see the quarterback. So I can see why there's some optimism and enthusiasm at 1265 about what could happen on that side of the ball.
Gabe, did I or did I not say that to you this morning on the production call?
Yeah.
I was like, Jeff Hafley is a joy to listen to. I mean, if you love ball and you love the Packers, you should just tune into the 17 minutes that he talked yesterday because it will make you want to run through a brick wall. Jason, it sounds like you had a similar experience. There's nothing more important than fundamentals and technique was just one of the things he said yesterday. Jason, I love that question that you had to him about what is the process? Like, what exactly are you going through? How do you install a new defense? What are the stages? And I was fascinated by, you know, kind of how the sausage was made there. Did you appreciate that he went into it? I know he said he could have taken 30 minutes to go into it with you, but I thought he did a good job of breaking it all down.
Well, first of all, what's a production call? I've never heard of one of those. Because we don't obviously do them with Old Boy.
Surprise! Look, you guys just get surprised by your content?
yeah, sometimes. It's part of his charm, and that's why he's great. Look, first of all, I agree that he was really, really good. Like, and, you know, I had some fun with my question. He said he could take a half hour to explain. I said, I got time. I also wanted to say, the last time you talked was February 22nd. So yeah, why don't you take as much time as you need there, bud? But I did. I thought it was really interesting for him to break down that. Look, whether you're, you know, coaching Chase's team when he was little or your girls now, or I'm coaching or Gabe someday is coaching or whatever it ends up being, Chewy, I don't know how the hell Chewy would coach. He's tough, you know. But fundamentals and that part of it is so important. And I would defer to Chewy on how much time generally gets spent on that, because even at the NFL level where you might assume that everyone has their fundamentals down, if you're changing what you're going to ask them to do, say in the secondary where your back pedal is going to be different, your drops are going to be different, whatever it might be, I think it's really interesting that that's something that he's emphasizing because they're going to be aggressive. He said this is not going to be passive. It's not going to be, you know, keep everything in front of you, which I don't think it was meant to be a shot at Joe Barry. I think it was just meant to explain how different they're going to be on that side of the ball compared to what we're used to seeing.
So as a fan, when do you think that we're going to be able to start seeing these changes that he keeps talking about and everybody gets excited about? Are we going to notice something right away in the first preseason game, game one of the regular season, yeah, game five of the regular season?
No, I think you'll notice it. And now, again, I say that, and I saw a tiny sliver of the defensive playbook during the rookie camp for one day, right? I wasn't at Saturday's practice, so that's all I've seen. I would say this, you know, I think you'll see them, you know, the first thing that will jump out at you, I would think, is fewer instances of 8 yards off the ball when it's third off the line of scrimmage when it's third and four, right?
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff. But again, I do think it's interesting how much of a misnomer it was. You know, he says he's going to mix coverages, right? And all defensive coordinators do that. He's not reinventing the wheel there. But I think we all kind of assumed, you know, Jen, you listened to the same podcast I did, and everyone did, because we had so little of his words to work off of when we first learned he was going to be the guy. But he talked about how he really believes in press man coverage, right? And that, as it's turned out, is not going to be their bread and butter in terms of coverage. He wants them to play zone coverage with vision to the football, vision and break, he calls it. And why that's important is that he's taking over a secondary that had 7 interceptions last year. 7. You know, this league is now at a point where, yeah, it's great if you can, you know, limit the yards or whatever else, but the two biggest indicators of whether your defense is good or not is red zone. Do you keep them from scoring touchdowns, and turnovers, takeaways. And as Joe Barry would say, we don't call them turnovers, we call them takeaways, because you have to take the ball away. They're not just going to give it to you. That was one of his many self-evident explanations that we would get from Joe.
And just for perspective, Jason, 7 was one of the worst in the league. Like, for people out there who are
many.
Like,
I'm sorry.
No. It's for
bad.
People who are like, what was 7? Was 7 good? I think that only the Titans had fewer at 6.
Yeah, bad, not good. So look, we'll see how that plays out. And Gabe, you know, I think the other important thing to note here is that after 2 press conferences with him, of course it's easy to be excited, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's really engaging. What he's telling us is the kind of stuff that Packers fans want to hear. But they're undefeated right now. They have not given up 400 yards in a loss to the Bears. So, you know, right now is obviously the honeymoon phase, and then we're going to see what they do on the field. So it is easy to be positive, but I do think the stuff that he's talking about, if it comes to fruition, I think Packers fans are going to be excited. I would add this, though. If they're going to be aggressive, you know, you can say whatever you want about Joe Barry's system and the letting completions in front of you on 3rd and 6 because you're playing so far off, but it was effective in making teams drive the length of the field and not get an exorbitant amount of big plays over the top on you. The problem is that they struggled to stop the run, which helped teams be able to go down the field on you. And so while the concept might have been strong and might have been smart to want to make teams earn every blade of grass, more often than not, they earned it.
Jason Wilde hanging out with Jen, Gabe, and Chewy this morning. It was not just Jeff Hafley who spoke yesterday at Lambeau Field. Matt LaFleur also spoke. And one of the things that he talked about was Jordan Love and the way he has interacted with the rookies already this year. Josh, you go ahead and play that sound for us.
Yeah, I think it just shows how far he's come, his maturity level, and really kind of taking the reins, taking ownership of this team. And he's been fantastic throughout the course of the offseason. And, you know, that's kind of what we expect from him.
Jason, what do you think they think of Love's evolution as a leader?
Well, I think they're certainly encouraged, and they love the way he goes about it, right? I think everyone has a different personality, and he is a little more understated in terms of his approach. We've talked before about how he's not really a scream or yell or embarrass you type leader, which sometimes guys do need, but some guys don't respond to that, and he doesn't certainly respond to that, so he doesn't do that to his guys. Now, look, it'll be interesting to see how much more vocal, how much he adjusts his style as they continue to get younger and younger, right? They moved on from some more veteran players this offseason. They're going to, I'm sure, keep doing that. And then he's, you know, someday, potentially, if he's as good as we think he is, he's going to end up in the same spot as Rodgers, where all the guys that he came up with will be gone, and he'll have to find a way to relate to guys that are a meaningful amount younger than he is. He hasn't gotten anywhere close to that yet. He's only going to be his second year as the starter. But, you know, just little things. And I know Rodgers did this to some degree, too, so it's not like you know, Jordan's the first quarterback to do this, but the fact that he made sure that he texted every single draft pick and reached out to him, the fact that he made sure he was there on Thursday when the guys came in just to kind of come around the locker room and, you know, introduce himself, or as Jordan Morgan said, dap him up. And Jordan Morgan admitted that he was nervous when he ran into him. So I do think that that's a really good thing. I mean, there's one thing that I was obviously very critical of Rodgers for, and that was in the 2022 offseason. Despite getting that new contract, he did not come to the offseason program. And I think a tacit admission that he was wrong to not come was the way he behaved when he went to New York. He may never admit publicly that he should have been here. You know, his argument was, I have my process and whatever else. But all those young guys, they needed him here that offseason. And I'm not saying they went 8-9 just because he didn't come to the offseason program, but I thought that was a colossal mistake by him. And Jordan Love is not at the point where he could do that anyway, but I think he understands the importance of being there, especially as he's, you know, building this connectivity with still very young guys that are in their second or third season.
Well, that was illustrated with an Amari Rodgers tweet that he deleted over the weekend, Jason, about, you know, Rodgers reaching out, you know, trying to spend times with the young receivers the Jets drafted this year, and Amari saying that he, you know, would have done better with that. He since deleted the tweets. Do you think that's true? If Aaron Rodgers would have been kinder to Amari Rodgers, would Amari's career be in a better spot?
I mean, if you know, I think we have to look at both sides of this, right? Like, Amari's, is he on a roster now?
I doubt it because he's in the UFL.
Yeah. So, you know, he's had, I think, two other teams pick him up since, which he didn't make it there, and Rodgers didn't have anything to do with those teams. So I think we have to include that in the conversation. But look, again, and I've said this to Aaron Rodgers before, and I think back to last training camp or last offseason program when we were talking to Romeo Doubs, and I know I've brought this up to you guys before, but when he said, I learned a lot from Aaron, even with him barely speaking to me, and then this kind of look of, oh no, what did I just say, coming over his face, well, you said the truth. And as I said to Rodgers about that, like, I understand you feel like you did enough to connect with Romeo Doubs, but if he doesn't feel like you did enough, then you didn't do enough, right? I mean, it from a leadership perspective, it's, did you do enough for that guy to feel that connectivity? And whether or not you believe you did sufficient enough work with them is really irrelevant, because it means you didn't do enough for them. Now, you know, Romeo's a different cat. He's really good to work with, but he's a little bit different. Like, he's not super outgoing. He's really quiet. And so maybe Rodgers did think he did enough. In Amari Rodgers' case, like, I mean, Rodgers came out and ripped him pretty harshly publicly. And he, you know, Rodgers' defense was, well, I didn't mention him by name, but everyone knew who you were talking about. Right. And so, you know, maybe Amari Rodgers was, you know, like the leg lamp for a Gile, and he couldn't take that early in his time. I would put it this way. I don't think Aaron Rodgers helped him at all. And if he needed more of a arm around the shoulder as opposed to a kick in the ass, he did not give him the kind of leadership that Amari Rodgers needed to have a better chance to succeed. Now, it's still on Amari Rodgers. Let's not absolve him here and just say, well, Aaron Rodgers was mean to him, so that's why he didn't succeed. But at the same time, you know, look, whether you're a coach or whether you're a team leader, I have always believed that the ones that are really good know which buttons to push for which players. And so for me, the best way to motivate me throughout my entire life was for someone whose opinion that I cared about to be disappointed in my performance or my effort, and for them to say, I know you can do better. I need more from you. This was not good enough. I need you to be better. If you want to motivate me, that's the way to motivate me. scream in my face, tell me I suck, that's not helping me. That's just going to further send me down a spiral. So there's going to be players like, you know, soft Jason Wilde on your team. Then there's going to be other guys that they need to be screamed at. That does need to be the way that you motivate them. Other ones need a lot of positive reinforcement and need to be told what a good job they did. Congratulations on your WBA award, that kind of stuff. And if that's what they need, then you got to give them that. And in fairness to Aaron Rodgers, for so much of his time, and we forget all this because all the other stuff toward the end, but he was really good at that stuff.
Yeah.
Like the stories about him and Lucas Patrick eating pancakes when Lucas Patrick was ready to quit because he didn't think he was good enough to play in the NFL after making it as a tryout guy. Like, that stuff matters too. But, you know, I just feel like in Amari Rodgers' case, in Romeo Doubs' case, toward the end here, it felt like Rodgers kind of forgot about that stuff. And with his behavior in New York, I would say he's one of those guys that is never going to say, I was wrong, but his behavior tells us that.
Jason, good stuff as always. We appreciate you hanging out with us. Have a great one, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, everybody. Take care. Be good.
He's Jason Wilde. Listen to him on Wilde and Tausch right after Jen, Gabe, and Chewy, Monday through Friday right here on 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee. Are you ready to upgrade the concrete surfaces in your home? Let me tell you about Showtime Floors and Floor Shield. It is used by military bases, airports, businesses, and, of course, residential homes. That's what matters to you, right? Let's say you're pulling into your garage and you see cracks or uneven surfaces in your garage. Well, it's time to call Showtime Floors and ask them about Floor Shield. It's designed to beautify and protect your concrete surfaces. Plus, it is eco-friendly and non-toxic. They are offering same-day installation, and you can enjoy a 15-year warranty against wear. Mention ESPN for free crack repair and 10% off. Get more information on Showtime Floors and their product, Floor Shield, by visiting ShowtimeFloors.com. That's ShowtimeFloors.com.
You are listening to Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
You got to have a condiment with the bread.
Yeah, you want some sort of
alone.
Yeah, you want some sort of lubricant with the bread. Yes, that's correct.
Yes.
It's just necessary.
You follow
like,
me?
You don't just be sitting there eating like pieces of white bread with nothing on it.
Can't be going dry.
Yeah, can't be raw dog and just white bread.
On 94.5 ESPN.
If you missed any of our conversation with Jason Wilde, who was there yesterday when Jeff Hafley was speaking, you can find it on Wisconsin On Demand, wherever you get your podcasts. I'm sure Jason will be talking about it on Wilde and Tausch today as well. I wanted to ask him, and we ran out of time, about Alex Magoo switching over to receiver. Now, unless you are a big Packers fan, you might not even know who Alex Magoo is, but he was in the quarterback room when I was up there for training camp. Got a chance to chat with him. Really interesting dude, by the way. Like, really interesting. Very introspective. I was like, oh, he's, you know, he'll probably never see the field, but man, is he nice to talk to. So it was announced over the weekend that Alex Magoo, because of his work with the scout team, was switching from quarterback to receiver. Now, of course, the quarterback room has gotten crowded as they drafted Michael Pratt this year. They obviously had Sean Clifford, the big red dog, in there, as well as Jordan Love. So this is an opportunity for Magoo to stay on the roster. Matt LaFleur saying they may add a fourth quarterback at some point, but he has said in the past it is tough to get them reps. It's tough to get them work, even during training camp and all of these practices. I like the idea of the creativity of taking a guy out of the quarterback room. He did so well when he was running with the scout team and he was running receiver routes that they want to see what he can do. I am really interested in this story to see if Alex Magoo can stick with the Green Bay Packers as a receiver, Gabe. You not so much.
No. I mean, this guy's not going to make the roster. Didn't make the roster last year. I mean, it's good that they like him. Maybe he can be a special teamer. Maybe he's somebody that they call up. But you know what's more crowded than the quarterback room?
Wide receivers?
Yeah. Like, they didn't even draft one. Didn't even bother drafting one because they're like, well, I don't know where they're going. So I can't imagine that a 28-year-old who's never played wide receiver, switching to wide receiver, is somehow going to make an impact on the 2024 Green Bay Packers.
So you would be shocked if he makes the team?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Again, maybe he's a practice squad guy. He gets called up a couple of times with the way the practice squad rules work now because they like him as a special teamer, because clearly he has some athleticism. But outside of that, I don't see him having any sort of impact on the 2024 Green
Bay
Packers.
Why not just cut him outright then? They made cuts. It was announced yesterday that they did release some people, some names you might know, but why not just release him then? Yeah. Why not say it just didn't work out?
They obviously like him. So they want to give him an opportunity to stick around. Your roster's 100 guys right now, right? So if you're getting cut from the 100 guys, yeah, best of luck to you. You know, maybe you can sign on for a UFL team before the end of the season, but clearly they like him. There's obviously, I would say, some stuff that they do like about his athleticism. They're intrigued, but it's the luxury you have on May 7th of having literally 100 people on your roster.
Who is the most successful guy in the history of the NFL to make that conversion? We were talking about the Tom Brady roast the other day, and Julian Edelman was up there on that stage, and he famously was a quarterback in college who made that transition in the NFL, and you could say to a pretty high success level. I mean, he was Super Bowl MVP that one year. I don't know which one of the years the Patriots won it, but it was one of the years that they won it, that he was the Super Bowl MVP. Is he the guy who made it most successfully? Obviously, Randall Cobb, we know, was a quarterback at Kentucky and made the transition to a slot receiver in the NFL.
Cordell Stewart was a really good wide receiver. Started out quarterback. I mean, eventually became a quarterback again. But
Antoine Randall L.
Antoine Randall L. is probably, yeah.
Terrell Pryor was a flash, but he was a pretty exciting receiver for a time.
Yeah, I think it's Randall L.
Yeah, it has to be.
Is that the easiest transition to make? I know that we talk sometimes about defensive backs and guys going from corner to safety, but obviously there's some variance in what those responsibilities are as well. Quarterbacks obviously know the route tree.
Yeah,
they obviously know all of the nuances of the routes because that's, you know, they're watching these guys do it and they're putting the ball where it needs to be at, you know, certain times. Is that the easiest transition to make from somebody who's been in the pocket, seeing the entire field to running routes?
Probably just because it's the most isolated too, right? Like you don't have to, offensive line, you're looking at a bunch of different things. Tight end, you have to look at a bunch of different things. Running back is different as well. You probably don't have the body type to be able to survive there. Whereas you have a little bit of athleticism, you know the route tree, you understand how the route combinations work. Yeah, that you're kind of getting a foot up.
But it's not easier than switching like on the offensive line, right? Especially
offensive line is offensive line. Yeah.
Oh, it is. We're not separating guards and tackles. You're all the same.
Well, yeah. Well, it's the same as, I mean, technically all the wide receiver positions are different too. Right? Slot's a little bit different than playing on the outside. Weak side's a little bit different than the strong side. Offensive linemen are all offensive linemen. It's all grouped together.
Joshy, what do you think? What's the easiest transition if you're going to go from position to position?
It's probably that. The big difference is that the requisite athleticism required to play that position. Like, it's a common place for people to go quarterback to wide receiver. I think, obviously, as you mentioned, because you know the nuances so much. But I also think corner to wide receiver is also a common thing we see. Travis Hunter plays both ways in college.
Actually, I think it goes more often, if I'm being honest. I think it goes from wide receiver to a defensive back because they realize you can't catch.
Correct.
You're fast.
You've got some athleticism.
You can't catch.
See if we can use that athleticism
good
for you
stop,
to
start, on the other side. The cuts, the all that stuff. Yeah. You see tight end happen a lot too, quarterback to tight end. I can think of a successful one, but Tim Tebow famously did it. Taysom Hill became.
They forced him to do that because there was no way he was going to have success as a quarterback in the league, right? It was like, hey,
Taysom Hill's probably
here,
made the most money. That's a great point, Joshy.
Yeah, Taysom Hill has quite the career.
But now he's quarterback almost exclusive, right?
No.
They've got him running at tight end.
All sorts of different things.
They list him as quarterback now because they're trying to fudge with the extra guy you can put up there, but the NFL forced them to make him a quarterback. But he lines up out wide.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't just line up in line. He's all over the field when he comes up.
Let's put it on the Jen, Gabe, and Chewy Twitter poll. Will Alex Magoo stick with the Green Bay Packers at wide receiver? Yes or no? Very simply this morning. I'm fascinated by the storyline. I would love to see him have success. Obviously, the Packers see something in him. You don't just give away roster spots, even at this time of year. But Gabe is pretty pessimistic that this will work out in his favor. We got to take a break here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Lots of stuff to get to in the second hour of the show. Did you see the guy who caught the home run at the Brewers Kansas City game with the glove on? That gave my guys a little agita. We'll get into that as the show rolls on after this.
Join former NBA stars and Marquette basketball alumni Dwayne Wade and Travis Diener as they return to Milwaukee this summer for Wade versus Diener Champions for Literacy. Golf alongside the stars at North Shore Country Club on June 17th. It's a day full of food, fun, events, and good golf, all while funding local youth literacy projects. If golf isn't for you, check out the tee off party on June 15th at Pilot Project. Learn more at wadedienergala.givesmart.com.
You're listening to Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Where else can you get football analysis that includes things like dropsies and picksies and intercepsies and flowy? It's flowy. Flowy. The offense needs to be more flowy.
On 94.5 ESPN.
It doesn't matter what age you are. Low testosterone can be an issue with any guy. That's where mentality comes in. Local healthcare facility specifically dedicated to helping men feel and perform at their very best. Look, you could be dealing with low testosterone, not even realize it. You're tired, groggy, just don't feel like yourself. Don't have that energy to attack your day like you did a year or two ago. Those could be signs of low testosterone. And I was kind of dealing with that. I dismissed it as, oh, I'm getting older, waking up earlier in the day. That's kind of why, you know, these changes are happening. No. Turns out my testosterone levels are low. And if that sounds like you, you can work with Mentality. Go through their process, get a blood panel done. At the end of the blood panel, if your testosterone levels are low, you find out about a week later, well, then you can start working with Mentality. And it's not a one-size-fits-all thing. It is a customized testosterone treatment plan just for you. So go to LowTUSA.com. Mentality allows treatment to fit into every guy's lifestyle. Learn more about Mentality and their low testosterone treatments at LowTUSA.com.
We asked you this morning on the Jen, Gabe, and Chewy Twitter account, what is the worst part of moving? Joshy revealed to us this morning that he has moved 12 times in the last 8 years, which has got to be some sort of record, right? I know military families are often famous for moving around a lot because of the military person's responsibilities, but you're not in the military, Joshy.
Sure ain't. Doing radio.
And so we were asking you,
before that,
Joshy,
he was selling cell phones.
Yeah, as Joshy is about to wrap up his most recent move, what is the worst part of moving? Is it the packing? Is it the unpacking? Is it the heavy lifting? Is it going through your things? Is it something else that we haven't even thought about? Go ahead and weigh in on that on the Jen, Gabe, and Chewy Twitter account. Pratik, who you mentioned you lived with at one point, or couch surfed at one point with, says, oh, I'm sorry, not Pratik, someone else. I glanced and thought it was Pratik. It's not Pratik. It's James White, who says all of the above. Should we have put all of the above as an option on the Jen, Gabe, and Chewy Twitter poll?
Maybe, but I mean, that's, no, you have to pick the worst parts.
I was gonna say.
There's one. There's only one. You don't get to cop out and say it all sucks. No, there's a power rankings to this. We don't have our power rankings today, although maybe we could do this. But I will tell you this. I think an underrated part that Josh is about to go through now is cleaning out the old place. Now that the old place is empty, having to go back through and clean it
well,
so
like,
you can get
mean
your
like
deposit
sweep
back.
And mop dust and all of that stuff. Yeah. Like, yeah, there's nothing like finding the mice poop where you didn't know that the mice were, where you're like, oh boy.
But like you want to be done. Like Josh, I'm sure, is ready to be done. And the good news is, I guess, because you're paying double rent, you've got plenty of time to go back.
Sure do.
But I guarantee you're pushing that thing off until the end of the month.
Yeah, I think we're going to do it in pieces and then kind of just slowly chip away at it. Because, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of areas in every house where it's like, well, I should probably clean that. But that's a lot of work. We'll deal with that later.
Guess what it is? Guess what time it is, Josh?
It's later.
It's later o'clock.
The worst to me about the cleaning is like the oven and the fridge, having to like disassemble that stuff, clean up. Ugh. I'd much rather be on my hands and knees scrubbing the bathroom floor than dealing with the fridge and the oven.
Because they have all the parts, you're saying.
Yes.
Right? Like taking the drawers out, cleaning the drawers, putting the drawers back underneath the drawers. That bottom of the refrigerator, man, that's one area. You just want to, I go in blind. I don't want to know. I don't want to see it. I don't want to know. All right, we'll take a break here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Lots of stuff to get to the second hour of the show. Stick around.